Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast today is 422?
One.
One?
Okay. 421.
Okay, yeah, because yesterday was the big 420 weed holiday that, I guess, you know, if this is smoking in the crib, people didn't get to do what you usually do, which is, you know, gathering in parks and...
I still don't understand where that started.
I don't know either. I mean, I'm, obviously there is something, but I just don't know. I'm not.
It kind of don't hit the same.
It don't hit the same. It's kind of like it's like I don't even know how long it's been around, but I remember when it kind of first started, it was a pretty big deal, especially because of I'm almost positive when it first started, weed wasn't legal.
Yes, anyway. Exactly.
That was the thing. It was like, yo, we're good today, even if it's not legal, we're gonna all smoke out. But now that there's so many states that have made legal, and even the states that it's not legal, you know, there's all kind of suppliers, and you know, you could buy weed and gummies and shit anywhere at this point. So, like I guess you said, it don't hit the same. The thrill is gone. The thrill is gone.
Totally.
The thrill is gone. So you know, but peace to the hard body weed smokers. I mean, Fauci said you ain't supposed to be smoking weed like that with the Rona because I guess it, you know, your lungs need to be as clear as possible. So he says smoking is not a good thing. By the way, I ain't seen Fauci in a minute.
Yeah, I think they put Fauci on a timeout, I think that was
fucking up basically.
Well, yeah. Well, also because he was giving scientific data and giving factual evidence as to why people should still be at home.
Yeah,
for a little while longer, I think he was off brand, and I think that he was also showing up president. And we all know that you can't show up Donald Trump.
Yeah, and you're right. And also they had to kick him off the stage because, you know, and we could just jump on into this now. Georgia and Florida have said, Georgia's basically opening up a whole bunch of their stuff on Friday. Barbershops, beauty salons, restaurants, gyms, bowling alleys.
And then restaurants and movie theaters and lounges open on Monday.
Yeah, exactly. So they're basically going right back to regular. As their numbers are increasing, their numbers are going up. The amount of cases that they're finding and the amount of people that are dying are still on the upswing. And Georgia's like, well, fuck that. We're just going forward anyway. So, as far as Fauci goes, I'm sure that's also why he's not around, because he was just disputing all of that. Like, no, we can't open up shit. We ain't ready yet. But so they kicked him off the stage. So then, and then the governor of Florida, he opened his beaches this week. And I believe he's on the path to do the same thing as the governor of Georgia, which is kind of start opening up, you know, the beauty salons and barbershops. Now, of course, this has started the the hoteps, with the theory that the governor, that Georgia's trying to kill black people about, because they know that these are places that we like to go to the most. And although obviously I think there will be some black folks that will participate in the opening of these spots, I think that shows people's myopic view of Georgia, because they're just thinking about Atlanta. It's like, no, they're going to open up everywhere. The whole state can open up. It's going to
I also find it funny because, like, even if those places are open, there's a requirement for you to go, right? So if you know that if you're so woke, right, and this is a plot to kill the black man, right, like, why would – I mean, you don't have to go to the barbershop.
Exactly.
You don't have to go to a bowling alley, and you don't have to go get a tattoo.
Yeah,
like, I promise you, none of that shit's going to sway anything if that's what your concern is. So why is that some big plot? There's nobody's forcing you to do any of that shit.
Yeah, it's almost like, and this is one of the things that, I mean, we'll get back to this in a second, but this is one of the things I always have issues with the hoteps. Is even when I remember a few weeks ago when all those boys was riding their ATVs around D.C., and we talked about that, and when people having these coronavirus parties, and people are like, man, see, they just want us to have these parties. And it's like, yo, but so what your essence is saying is that we as people don't have enough
No control.
We don't have enough discipline to not do it. So if you put it in front of us, we gonna go. So exactly. So it's the white man's fault for opening it, not our fault for actually going.
It's fascinating to me.
It's amazing to me. But you know, everybody in Georgia and Florida, please stay out of these places, because I'm fearful that your numbers are going to spike. Now you're already on the upswing. Anyway.
Well, this also puts a lot of, well, we know that one of the big entrepreneur, demographics are barbershops and hair salons, right? It's a huge business.
And nail salons, right?
But what this also is going to mean now is that once the state opened back up, it means that there are going to be no more deferments on rent.
Rent's
going to be expected. Yes. See, rent's going to be expected now because you can open your doors. Gym memberships, whether you go or not, if the gym is open, they come in for that membership paper.
They come
paper.
In for your dough, yeah.
They come in first. Taking it. You come in first. They got to have all that.
Not even May 1st, my nigga. They will prorate your shit. I don't care if your gym membership is $50 or $10 or whatever it is. When that gym opens up, they will figure out a way to prorate your shit. Because when you're talking about numbers on such a large scale, like a Planet Fitness or somebody like that, you know, those $3 or $2, whatever that number is that they come up to the decision to prorate you, right? Like, that's a massive amount of money.
Shit adds up. Yes.
Of course it adds up, right? And if you're a small business and you likely have a lease in a building that you do not own, and the odds say, the numbers say, that the person that owns that building is not a black person.
Probably not.
Right? And guess what? They're going to say, okay, You open back up May 1st. We're expecting you guys to not only come back in, but whatever the deferments have been, if there were 2 months deferments, 3 months deferments, they've probably worked out some sort of payment plan to tack onto your rent. So if your rent was, for the sake of numbers, your rent in your place was $1,000. And you now have $2,000 in deferment, they're going to divide that up over the course of the next, you know, year or whatever your lease terms are. Or maybe not even your lease terms, because your lease may be really long, but it'll probably be I'd probably say anywhere between 9 months to a year that you got to tack that on. So now your rent is $1,100 or $1,200. And again, doesn't sound like much, but that extra buck means, you know, a little DeVarious. He can't go. He can't be on a camping trip. He can't go to Six Flags now.
We might have to cancel that Netflix.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And this is it's just a dangerous game we playing across the board financially, obviously, health wise. And I keep saying it. I sound like a broken record, but I think this is just going to be an awful summer. Like, just period. Like, it's just going to be horrible. I think more people are going to be dying. People are going to be broke. A lot of businesses are going to be closed. It's just going to be the domino effect of this.
It's going to be horrific.
Horrific.
And I think at very soon, we're going to see governors looking at how to institute bans on interstate travel to protect their own states. Because this is insane. Because if we let these people move about, you know, they are bringing risk to the cities that are trying to contain it.
Exactly.
Trying to contain it.
Yeah. Like Georgia is bordering, Tennessee on the north and South Carolina on the east. Those two states.
South Carolina's about to open back up too.
So oh, they opening up too?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. So the whole Southeast is about to be insane.
So what they're doing is those.
So Georgia, doors. Florida, South Carolina. Yeah. Which is one corridor,
and that's going to open up.
I heard Texas is coming.
Wow. Well, Texas is its own fucking universe in and of itself.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it's a scary man. So, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but yeah, but please be safe out there, man. You know, Jesus Christ. I want to mention this real quick. This show called The 20s, called 20s, right? Not The 20s. I just did it the black way, but it's called 20s. It's on BET. It's Lena Waithe's show. It's loosely based on her early part of her career. And it was eight episodes. I really enjoyed it. I don't think you've all seen it. It's really good. There's a bit of Insecure-ish to it, except the lead character is a lesbian. But just
it's based
kind of
on Lena, I believe.
Yeah. Lena Waithe, that's her early career. So it's a lot of Hollywood stuff, but it's just really well written. It's really well done. It's funny. The lead actress is awesome. I forget her name now. I think it's JoJo something. But if anybody got time now, so if you get some time to check it out, amongst the things that you're binging, because it's really, and they're only half hour episodes, so they're really quick and easy, but it is a real arc there. It's a really well-written, clever show. It's really good. So I just wanted to kind of mention that. Let's talk about, Black as Fuck. Did y'all get to watch any of it?
Oh, I watched it. I watched the whole season.
I'm six in.
I have more to go.
Yep, I'm six in, but I'm deep in enough where I could talk about it. So, Russ, what did you think about it? So you watched the whole thing.
I had ebbs and flows about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't say that I loved it,
okay,
but I definitely didn't hate it.
Okay.
I thought the show got better as the episodes progressed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little difficult for me to sort of follow, because we understand that there's a level of satire here, right? That is very clear.
Yeah.
But then we go into these spaces that's not really satire. It's very in depth, and it's very preachy. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean preachy, and I don't mean that in a pejorative, right? Like, it's not a negative way, but there's a very There are lots of teaching moments. There are some things about this that are just very difficult to grapple with, particularly as a Black parent.
That's what I kind of wanted to go into, the kind of like the parent thing, especially because you have a daughter who's the age of one of the kids, like in the same zone as two of the girls on the show, the same general zone, you know?
Yeah, so to me, I mean, and not to give away spoilers, because I know people are still watching, but, you know, I just don't know any kids who talk to their parents in that way.
Yeah.
One of the other things I thought was very interesting was that, so in this, they're all first generation money.
Yes.
And one of the things about Black-ish that I did kind of always appreciate was that there was a sense that, you know, they kind of, there was some level of connection. Like, you knew that they were doing this over the top shit because there was some level of connection to being poor and having those sorts of memories. And this just kind of feels like gaudy for gaudy's sake. And it felt a little bit over the top. Like, again, you know, I will take myself out of the equation, but I have friends who have done well in life, and they are the first of their family. Like, that story is very common, familiar to me.
Especially with Black folks.
Yeah. It's not that uncommon in the grand scheme. I may not be to that scale, but that story isn't uncommon. And there just seems to be such a wide, you know, disconnect from what I've seen in reality to what I saw on there. Again, it's a television show. This wasn't a referendum on, Black parenting, right? I wasn't looking at this as, you know, but it was difficult for me to sort of do the double dutch to get involved with that. Mm-hmm. But you saw, you know, the kids' dynamics and things of that nature, and you saw sort of the you saw things get a little preachy at times, and it's literally like the first couple episodes, I'll just say, it felt like it felt like the first time you had freedom to curse.
Yeah.
And you just cursed every single time you could.
Nonstop.
Because you could. And even when it didn't really make sense, you did it.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like. ABC had Netflix had taken the reins that ABC had put on him. And so he stepped into everything that ABC would not let him do. And he was a glutton. It was a teenager being left at home alone for a weekend, and you left them with $100 for emergency money, and they bought Chinese food with the $100.
Yeah.
And they just ate it. And pizza. And they just ate it, and the crib was crazy.
Yeah. You know what
I'm saying? They just wilded it out. But, yeah. I mean, again, it was I didn't think it was a bad show. I didn't necessarily love it. I would absolutely watch it again. But there's some things about Blackish that I don't love.
Yeah.
Particularly how Andre is written as a man. And I saw a lot of those sort of characteristics in what Kenya does.
Because Kenya's, Andre's based
on Kenya.
To the cursing thing, like you said, I was really thrown because Kenya's, first of all, let me deal with the cursing thing first. My thing with Kenya especially is the way he would curse at his kids, it would be like he would talk to them the way he would talk to like his friends curse. He'd be like, yo, what the fuck are you doing? Like, yo, what the fuck is wrong with you? Yo, what the, yo, that's some stupid shit. Like, I'm like, dude, like, that ain't real. And I do like the fact that it was, I guess, episode 4 or 5, he went to go see Tyler Perry, and Tyler Perry called him on it.
Yeah.
He cursed in front of his daughter, and Kyle was like, do you talk like this in front of your kids? Like, what are you doing, bro? Like, you know, I just thought it was very, like, because the cursing thing was really, really throwing me off. And I was surprised, and maybe this is who he is. I don't know that man at all, but, like, I felt like Kenya's very unlikable.
Well, okay, I want to jump in on that because somebody else said that. Somebody was like, I don't know how I'm supposed to like him or take him seriously. And my response was, who says you are supposed to do either? Like, to me, this is like a Black family version of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David is a fucking dick. And the show is about him being a dick, right? And to me, it's kind of like that with Kenya. Like, he had to do it more softly with Dre. But he plays it up here, and I think he's aware of it because of the fact that you said, like, every criticism I've heard about Blackish as fuck and that I heard of Blackish is actually addressed in the show. Like,
but I would give a little pushback on the Curb comparison, and here's why. And I've heard it before, so it's not you, but right. And I totally understand why that is a comparison, but like, the thing about Larry's character and being a dick is that Larry is very conscious about him being a dick, right? Like, not only does he not make any bones about it, he's very clearly ID'd on being a dick. Like, oh, this is my thing now, right? Like, Kenya never really does that in this. He's a dick across the board unconsciously, like unconsciously, right? He doesn't sort of identify that that's my thing, right? Like, you understand what I'm trying to say?
And there's a,
yeah, there's a very specific way that I think you can do that. And again, I don't think it was necessarily wrong. And I don't think, I don't think he saw it as, hey, I'm going to take this element of Curb and sort of, mimic it here. I think this is the way he wrote it, but I don't think it's kind of the same.
Yeah, somebody said that to me too. Now we were my other boy Sean, we discussed this earlier, and I said to me the difference is Larry doesn't have children, so he's kind of like a dick. He is kind of like a dick, but like this guy's a dick to his children.
You know what I'm saying?
So it's kind of like, damn, nigga, like what?
My Curb comparison is more for like right now we do not like we used to have the Larry Sanders Show, which was kind of like, we don't have another kind of like serialized fake docu-series style to compare this to, right? Like, it's not really a sitcom, but it's not really a docu-series. It's somewhere in the middle because it's based on real people with real celebrities showing up with real aspects of Kenya's life. That's the only thing I can compare it to. And I've heard other Black people say the way the kids talk to their parents and the way Kenya talks back to his kids, and even like Kenya talks to his wife, like that would never fly in a Black household. But I do think, and Kenya has addressed this criticism himself, this show ain't all the way for us. It's for white people, which is why they do Black History Explainers.
They actually address that on the show too.
Like, it's like
you make it black, you make black shows for white people. Right. So yeah, I mean, you know, and the whole thing, you know, with the gear and everything's over the top, with the Gucci, everything's like a big ass, you know, label Gucci suit that's $4,000 or whatever. I agree with Sean. Like I said, I'm not finished with this series. I think I'm like episode 6, so I'm getting close to
the end. You're kind of right there.
Yeah, I'm coming close to the end, but I do agree that this show to me got better as it went on. And it did address some things. I liked the when they had the cookout with his black family that came over. That was, you know, that was funny with the cousin who was a gangbanger who was trying to, you know, sell him on a show and all that shit. So there was definitely some good parts to it. And I also liked the fact that they addressed how his wife, you know, was a doctor. This character in this show was a lawyer, and how they stopped working and how she's kind of frustrated and can't find her way. And so it's kind of showing, like, but I felt like sometimes like the nigga was like just a rich nigga whining, like, and complaining. It's like, nigga,
no,
like,
that's kind of exactly what it was. And I thought that was interesting because it really just showed him like never really happy, right? He has all of these things, but he's never really happy. I do want to say, I don't like the trope of I don't fuck with my family. Like, I'm rich now and I don't fuck with my family. And I've seen that a lot. Mm-hmm. And listen, it makes for good fodder for comedy and for content because you have these, you know, two sort of different worlds juxtaposed and you're the person in the middle trying to navigate that. And I also understand that there's something very true about, you know, sort of moving away and your kids not having that connection. Mm-hmm. But you can show your kids not having a connection to that part of your family without having such disdain for them, right? Like, there's a level of, I don't really like it.
Maybe this is his life, but it does always bother me, like you said, when I see those shows and like he lives in Encino and he's from Inglewood, and which is, I guess, about maybe a 15 to 20 minute drive in LA. And it's like, but there's no connection. It's like you never ever go there to see your and both parents are alive. Like, it's like you never go there to see your mom. Like, you just don't ever go by your mom's crib. You don't ever go by your dad's crib or your auntie. Just never. Like, ever? Nigga, like, really? Like, I just,
yo, you know. I know niggas that keep a raggedy car just to go back to the hood to go see their family.
Exactly.
So you know what I'm saying? Like, just keep a little get around. Yeah. Just to move around in them kind of spots.
Yeah, exactly. So you ain't got to drive the Porsche over there. You drive like the little raggedy ass, you know, Toyota station wagon. Ain't nobody gonna pay no attention. So I'm just like Sean. I don't hate the show at all, and I'm not finished with the series either. I kind of don't know what my opinion is of it yet. I'm just kind of like, I don't know.
I think a lot of people.
Yeah, it's like that. I'm like this. Like,
and I've also seen a lot of people who are like, the back end of the season is better for them than the beginning of the season.
It definitely does get better.
Yeah, it gets more in depth, but I also think it's okay for us to not, like, we live in such a world where we have to have an opinion, and our opinion has to be one thing or the other, right? Like, it's either we're embracing this or we, like, there's some things where we can waffle on it. Like, we can kind of like it, you know, the show is not without flaws.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And it's okay. And there's a space for that. And we should allow him to sort of explore. This is new territory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Blackish was a far more traditional sitcom. It wasn't traditional in what we think of as a sitcom, but its design, where it was aired, how the content that was able to be put in there was far more traditional. This is sort of unheard of in terms of black comedy.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'm gonna watch the end of it, and now you get through it, and then we'll kind of readdress it once we both have seen the whole show. But did you want to mention? I saw you on Twitter talking a little bit about this whole Shake Shack thing.
Oh yeah, I mean, we can mention it. So, as everybody knows, as the the CARES package, the CARES Act, the $2.2 trillion package that came through, there was a stipulation for $350 billion to be allotted for small businesses. And small businesses are defined as businesses that are under 500 employees. And what happens is that the criteria to qualify for the for access to these loans was really broad. It was not very specific. So that meant companies, let's just say, for example, there's a company with 350 employees. They were going after the same money that a mom and pop restaurant that might have had two employees was going after.
Like the like local hardware little store or something bar, like that.
Hardware store, you know, little restaurant, you know, Jamie and them, right? So Shake Shack, which is a huge company, as well as Ruth Chris, who also got the maximum, which was $10 million, was the maximum. Apparently, the way Ruth Chris is structured, they were able to receive $20 million. And what I was saying was that because of the way these restaurants are sort of established and franchised, and they have holding companies, and there's a lot of corporate structure that is done by high paid attorneys to ensure that these companies are broken up just enough to where if, you know, one hits the rail, they don't all fall like dominoes.
It's like show, it's like a show game.
Yes. So listen, Shake Shack is also a public company that was able to get something like $75 million from investors in with share purchases or something like that. My thing was they shouldn't have applied to this at all. They were not the companies that the spirit in which this was out there for. And frankly, neither was Ruth Chris, right?
Definitely not Ruth Chris.
And what I realized was that this was a double-edged sword that the government was going to have to deal with, which is if we make companies have to prove their need, you will never get this money.
True.
By the time anyone got a chance to get that money, we'd be a year into this process. Right? So you have to sort of open it up to everyone, and you have to limit the criteria for the people to apply. Now, if I have a little small business checking account at, you know, down to the Chase, and I go and see Miss, you know, Miss whatever at the teller, and she kind of handles my account. Okay, it's not going to be the same as the people who are dealing with bankers on the level of multi-million dollar companies. It's just not
at all.
You're not going to get that access, and so you have a CFO or whomever is in charge of the accounting. Listen, it's their fiduciary responsibility to have these documents ready for this loan.
Yep.
It would be ultimately irresponsible for that position in that office to not have had these documents ready. It would have been up to a board or up to some sort of CEO or a person that is obviously above a CFO or that department to simply say, we're not applying for this. And my issue was that this was all done, the return of these funds was done to curry favor.
Yeah, it was a publicity stunt.
A total PR move. And I'm good. Like, I've never really been a Shake Shack guy, but I can promise you, any of those types of businesses, the Ruth Chris, and I've definitely gone to Ruth Chris. I love a steakhouse. Like, y'all not getting no more of my bread, bro. I'm not fucking with that.
Because Ruth Chris didn't even give they shit back.
Well, they not going to give it back because they got $20 million.
Exactly. They had revenue of $468 million.
Yo, fam, none of these places, much like the airlines, had a lot of cash reserves.
Now, I want to talk about that. Why do you think that is? Is that on purpose?
Yeah, I mean, you try not to have, having a bunch of money sitting in a bank account, it really doesn't work for you. right? It's you know, it's just like with any budget, right? Like you have outflows and inflows, and if your money is, you know, coming in on a regular basis because you're a high end steakhouse at you know, in New York and in major cities, yeah, you can kind of say with it, you know, in a worst case scenario, we're going to make, you know, $300,000 this week, or we'll profit this week, you know, and that's what they do, man. You know, you move that money around, you know, probably paying investors back. I mean, maybe you have some debt. I mean, you paying down your debt that you've accumulated to upgrade your restaurants, upgrade your equipment, pay your chef, all of that sort of shit.
Interesting, because I noticed that so many of these big companies that you would assume would have a whole gang of cash reserves really didn't have what I thought they would have.
Well, that's the game.
I don't know if you said this already, Sean, but it's also part of the appeal under like the kind of franchise corporations that we think would not technically qualify. I mean, technically they qualify, but who we feel don't really qualify for these loans. Isn't part of the appeal the fact that this is such a low interest rate loan?
Well, first of all, let's get something clear. The loan is forgivable.
Oh,
let's be very clear on that. The loan is forgivable. Here are the terms of the loan. The loan goes as such: you have a 75-25 split. You can spend 25% of your approved loan can go to overhead, rent, mortgages, utilities, you know, the basic sort of overhead upkeep. 75% of that money is required to be paid to employees. It is payroll protection program. That's literally what it's for, to protect the salaries of employees. Now, that doesn't specify whether or not those employees are to remain on. So you might have furloughed 25 people at a number. You might bring back 17 people at a number. You understand what I'm saying? So you're shifting costs. You can shift costs. If you don't adhere to the strict code of that, then I think the number is something, it's peanuts. It's like a 1% interest rate to pay back the loan. Now listen, our small businesses, if they get that, are they going to pay that back? You know, they might not. They might have been on the ropes already.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if Mr. Earl get, you know, $25,000 for his hardware store, and he doesn't meet the requirements to having paid that in rent or paid that in whatever, and he just breaks out, he's only obligated to pay back that $25,000 at 1% interest rate.
Yes. And he can stretch that out for life. Or just never really pay it back. Yeah, because what are they going to do? Chase everybody down who didn't pay that shit? Like,
so this is what, anytime there is money to be had, there will be people looking to take it.
Of course.
The same way them stimulus checks came in and people start getting them $1,200 was the moment you started getting the uptick in all of the scam calls, all of the telemarketing calls, your cousin and them, they doing the susu and you know, so-and-so needs you to invest. You give me one, I give you back eight and all of that.
Exactly. All that dumb shit.
Listen, a fool and his money shall soon part.
Soon part, exactly. I want to say peace to True Religion, who filed for bankruptcy too.
Again.
So all y'all,
who still buys that shit? Real question. I have no. Who still buys that?
I'm gonna tell you. I could tell you who still buys it.
Like, not an outlet.
Middle-aged, very tanned men in Florida. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
With the like the super duper button ups with their sleeves
and the frosted like, tips.
Frosted tips, driving moccasins.
Word.
Like they all have a look.
They got a look.
The car is spectacular and the swag is just it's the worst
it's disgusting.
Ever.
Disgusting. It's disgusting.
Know, yes, that's who's buying it.
Yeah, so they filed for bankruptcy again. They were bought a few years ago for $824 million, and now they have what's it called, debits, I guess, for lack of a better term, for $500 million. So, I mean, you know,
they also have assets and liabilities.
Go ahead, bro.
They have a terrible model because they have brick and mortar stores.
Yes.
So unlike a lot of your denim brands, there's no, you know, they have rent and overhead and all of that sort of
And they got the stores in the malls and all that shit. Yeah, they jumped out the window with those. So, you know, if you want to get some True Religious, now's the time to buy them. let's mention Real Housewives of Atlanta. They had their finale Sunday night.
Shower. I missed it. Yeah, there was a lot going on this weekend. There was a lot.
It was a lot. I watched it like late that night. I, you know, obviously because there was so much going on Sunday.
I had to watch 90 Day Fiancé first.
That's your shit. It was actually kind of a lackluster finale. Candy had a baby shower. There was some more talk about Todd and his daughter. His daughter actually was on the show because she had come down for the baby shower, and she mentioned that she's ready to come back, to move back to Atlanta. But there was no interaction between her and Todd on the show. The interaction between her and Candy. So I'm assuming maybe they're setting that up for next season if she decides to come back. You know, because there was a big argument at the shower between Nene and Kenya, and everybody's taking sides, and this is messy. I want to say one thing, though, real quick about it, which I find interesting. So this argument started between Candy and Todd because Candy's mom is still harping on the fact that Todd is a gold digger and going after her money and hasn't pulled his weight, even though he's opened up the old little G restaurant and a bunch of other shit. And, you know, he's earned his keep, but she still has it in her head. Candy, of course, runs back to Todd and tells him this. And that what pisses him off. So then Candy and her mom go to the OLG restaurant to have lunch. Todd is in there as well. He sees them, doesn't speak, and has lunch at the counter, because there's a counter you can sit as well. He's like, I'm not even going to sit with y'all. So then, of course, Candy and her mom especially catch an attitude because Todd never spoke to them. So then that started a big fight, and Todd was just like, yo, I don't want to deal with your mom's bullshit, man. I just stayed over here. I wanted to eat, ask what you to do. I didn't want to deal with it. And she was like, you could at least came over and said hi. And he was like, I guess. I don't feel like dealing with it. And that caused a huge thing to where Candy's mom didn't come to the shower. Because
I was wondering why she wasn't in any pictures.
That's why she wasn't there. So I found the situation interesting because it wasn't rude for Todd not to speak when they're literally probably like 8 feet away from each other. Yes. But we've seen over the years how much shit that Miss Joyce has talked about Todd. And Candy always runs back and tells Todd what she says. So like, right. I'm like, I don't quite know what Candy's...
Like, what does Candy expect Todd to do?
Exactly. What does she expect his reaction to be when you just told me your mom said I ain't shit? It's just a weird dynamic.
I also think that Todd has given Joyce a lot of grace and eaten a lot of her shit over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And there comes a point where I imagine it has to be like, what the fuck do you want from me? But I also think Joyce is trying to start shit because I noticed Joyce ain't really been on this season.
She wasn't on at all. Once or twice, maybe.
She might just need some attention. I don't know what's going on in her personal life, obviously. But Joyce also might just need some attention.
Maybe. I don't know.
Like, to start some shit.
Yeah, so it ended, I mean, Todd ended up apologizing to Candy. Joyce wasn't there, so. But it was just kind of like a can't win if you do, can't win, you know.
Well, I'm going to just say I didn't watch the show. And just to be clear, obviously, you know, we know them. So mm-hmm. I always try to tread lightly on this. But he owes Joyce an apology, too. He doesn't just owe that to Candy. He owes Joyce an apology because she been talking shit forever.
From day one.
Right. So this ain't new. So either you have to understand and accept that that's par for the course, and this is what I have to deal with, and I'll minimize, you know, and I'm not being dismissive of the fact that that was probably an overwhelming moment,
mm-hmm.
but you can't walk past your mother-in-law. Like my nigga, I'm talking as someone with a mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't ever walk past your mother-in-law. Like, that shit.
Don't say nothing.
Me and my mother-in-law could be at each other's neck, okay? And guess what? When it's dinner time, okay, her plate is going to come upstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to be mad. But yeah. I'm still going to bring her hot sauce, and I'm still bring all the shit that she... You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There is, and yes, we're going to be mad at each other tomorrow. And guess what? She's still going to go to her 10:30 doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
And I'm still going to drive her somewhere that I don't want to take her.
Exactly.
And I'm going to sit there and be mad, right? Well, like because how much interaction are we really talking here?
Yeah.
And you're never going to change that. Like, you're... Like one of the things you're going to have to make peace with is that, barring, you know, basically Candy would have had to marry a very wealthy man for that to not be Joyce's, Miss Joyce angle. Yeah. Right? Like, there's nobody she was ever going to date that would have ever had a tax return lower than hers that she wouldn't have felt this way about.
True, true, true.
It just wasn't going to happen, bro.
Yeah.
So either, you know, this is what you went for, bro. You married in, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
It is what it is.
Nigga, you're going to have to run out of Costco at some point.
Got to go pick up her prescriptions.
Hey, nigga, it's coming. It's coming. Spring chicken.
Yeah, and they just had a little baby, so, you know, she's going to be over there for the baby. And
nigga, you're going to be sitting out in the truck in front of Kroger's or the Publix, nigga. Word. Mad because she's taking forever.
Taking forever. She ain't come out yet. Damn. Cops ask you to move, you double park.
You gotta keep circling.
I'm out here. Where you at? I'm coming back around. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so I just thought that was kind of interesting. A couple little quick things. Wanted to say, RIP to Prince. Today was the 4th anniversary of his death. Just kind of wanted to mention that. That's been like a kind of thing on the timeline. And, Kim Jong-un allegedly might be on his way out of here. They said he has some type of surgery, and he's brain dead and has just slipped into a coma. I don't know what that means for North Korea. I don't know who his successor is. I know he has a sister that's around. I don't know if that means it goes to her because, it, you know, it's a family thing with them over there. I don't think he has a brother. He might have a brother, too. I definitely has a sister. But, you know, I don't know if that what that does as far as tensions in that region. Makes it better or worse. I don't really know what that means. He's fairly young. Is he like, what's he like, 40?
Yeah, but he's wildly unhealthy.
Yeah,
he's crazy. He's 14.
I don't know.
He's not that old. He's really not that old.
Yeah, he's like super young. I don't know if he's in his 40s or 40, but either way, he ain't like no 60s. He ain't like old guy, like you said, but he's wildly out of shape. You know, he doesn't take care of himself. As all you can see, he just eats like a pig, you know, and I doubt he's doing any real exercising. So again, you know, I don't know what's going to be the outcome here. And like I said, he, you know, I don't know who the successor is, and I don't know what it even means for the region, as far as stability or whatever. Yeah. Yo, your man is 36.
Wow.
36. I told you, he's mad young.
That would make his obsession with Dennis Rodman right on brand.
Because he was watching the Bulls.
When
he was like in high school.
He's a kid. Yeah.
He's a kid. Yeah, he's literally a kid. So that shows you like how bad a shape he was. To be 36 and in this condition, you know, it means your body was definitely not well taken care of. So we'll kind of, you know, stay on that and see what happens with that. Also, I want to mention real quick Dwayne Williams' doc. They had part 3 this week. And like Sean said, they are definitely spinning this as Wayne might be innocent. This week, there was an interview with Wayne in the doc. And there was just kind of more people talking about how, you know, Wayne might not have been able to do all this. Now, there was some, you know, there was some counters to it, including one guy who's been on the doc whose brother got killed, who said he saw Wayne. Wayne tried to come grab him as a kid. He said he didn't know it was Wayne at the time, but when Wayne got arrested, he saw on TV, he was like, oh shit, that was a guy that tried to grab me. But they're trying to poke all kind of holes into Wayne, you know, Wayne dumping the body into the water. It's turning into like, you know, it's Wayne.
You know, and one of the things, man, that I felt, pretty interesting this week was they started to actually dig into his dad.
Yes.
And his dad's behavior and the, yes. and the house.
Yes.
And what they found there versus what they were able to gather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the folks are still ignoring all of the people that are looking to point fingers that Wayne was not involved with this, all seem to ignore these very obvious things, which was the witnesses that said the father was clearly burning documents. He and Wayne were yes. burning documents in that barbecue pit.
Documents right? and pictures.
Pictures, all mm-hmm. of those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the fact that we, like I've said before on numerous occasions, the murder stopped, right? Like we're all ignoring that. And they kind of got into the politics about this. And what they tried to do was sort of spin it in a way that the DA didn't really want to move forward with charges.
Mm-hmm.
Like he didn't feel comfortable. And that may very well be accurate. And I don't think anyone here or anyone rationally that has followed this case would suggest that all 29 of those murders were at Wayne's hands.
Yeah.
But we definitely feel confident in saying that, you know, there were some things here.
Yes. Wayne did something.
Wayne absolutely did something. And yes. and also another thing that they keep trying to point out is that, and I don't mean this, in any disrespect to the deceased. Wayne seems to have a type that he would kind of take advantage of. Mm. And I wonder if those adults were operating at an adult level, you know, mentally, not that they were like wildly challenged where they were not able to function.
Yeah.
Not suggesting, you know, they seem to be, you know, regular people, right? Mm-hmm. Like they had lives. They, you know, these were not just numbers, but they also seem to have, you know, I don't know, man. It seems to me Wayne being very articulate, very yeah. smart.
Smart for his own good, actually.
Yeah, way too smart for his own good, was able to do these things. And I'm still not convinced that this did not have some level of sexual connection. I'm not convinced of that.
I totally believe that. I totally believe there was something else going on. Wayne, you know, is obviously telling people that he didn't do it, and they found the rope in his car.
No one has found Cheryl Johnson.
It no
has
one.
Been 40 fucking years.
Yeah.
And no one has found Cheryl Johnson. You know what else? Something that was very, very interesting. I was listening, shout out to Kels, because with the Thanks for Asking podcast, she talked about it. And,
yeah.
and it was also something that I noticed too, was that this is the kind of case that would make an attorney's career. This is if there was a shred of fucking evidence
yeah.
that would have gotten him off, that would have made a legitimate case that he was wrongfully convicted.
Mm-hmm.
You mean to tell me that the greatest law minds over the last 42 years were not able to do this?
Yeah.
You telling me that Johnny Cochran, God yeah. rest his soul, wouldn't have been up there in the baddest mustard double-breasted suit with his shit shining?
Yeah, with some gators on.
You know, waxing poetic about
yeah.
Wayne being railroaded.
And how they did Wayne wrong. Yeah, exactly.
William Kunstler been down there.
Yeah.
They said, all of them say the same thing. Every lawyer that comes down there goes through the dockets, they go through all of the shit and realize, this is not, you know,
yeah, yeah,
this is what it is.
It is what it is. Like you said, the fact that they haven't found this Cheryl Johnson in 40-some years, and they say his story about going to see her where she lived, which was far from where he lived, actually, at 3, 4 in the morning, so he could go back and see her again at 7. This don't make no sense at all. Like, nigga,
that's what? Dumb as fuck. Why would you not just, if you were supposed to meet her at 7, and
leave
you
at 6. Sure, leave at 5:30.
You leave at 6. You leave at
yeah.
5:30.
Yeah.
You fucking go out. What are you going to do? Go come back home for an hour
and then go back. Back. Yeah, around? Exactly.
And
why is Cheryl Johnson wanting to do an audition with you at 7 in the morning?
What do what are we talking about here,
yeah,
my
come
nigga?
Come on, Wayne. Yeah, so but you know, there is that faction that always is of like the conspiracy theorists, and they show them someone on this documentary where they just don't want to believe. There's a part after the Wayne called the church where one of the guys, I think he was an attorney, or he was a policeman, a white cat, and they showed him talking to some people in the church, and he's like, basically like, bruh, like I was on the case. I'm telling you, like, he's guilty. And there's still people like, well, no. It's like, oh man, it's just some people just not gonna believe. So I just found it interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the Michael Jordan doc. The Last Dance came on Sunday night. The first two episodes came on Sunday night. I really enjoyed this a lot, and I think it's gonna get better as it goes on. And it's a documentary, a 10-part documentary. I think they're going to be showing 2 parts per week about the last season of the Chicago Bulls championship run and everything that Michael Jordan and the rest of the team was kind of going through at the time. And this is the first time Michael's actually really done any interviews or spoken about things. And it's, you know, he's keeping it raw and real. Like, he's not doing the sugarcoating, shiny interview. He's talking about, and they luckily got a chance to record the Bulls, like, the whole season. So it's a whole bunch of, like, you know, behind the scenes footage. Guys are cursing. There's all kind of stuff, like, on the bench. It's like very intimate footage of what's happened in that season. And I found it interesting. What did you think about it?
I watched it. It was great, man. I thought it was, first of all, peace to Mike for having the fucking Cohiba Lanceros. Those are like some of the most exclusive fucking cigars. It's like,
like a nigga having a special Rolls Royce or something.
Yeah, like, it's like, you can't even really find them. I couldn't find those in Cuba.
Damn.
Yeah. But,
so Mike really got a guy.
Yo, Mike's guy has to have a guy to go with. But it was dope to really sort of see Mike be open, you know, for a very long time. So over the last maybe 4 years, maybe the last 3 years, actually, we've actually had more access to Mike than we've had maybe the previous 25 years.
Yeah.
Right. He wasn't very accessible in being real. Like, he, you know, obviously he would come out and shake hands and kiss babies, and he was representative of the entire game of basketball for a very long time. And so you don't really get those raw kind of stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get those stories third hand, second hand, but you don't really get them from him. And sort of him being and giving sort of in-depth interviews. So I thought it was refreshing. I thought the way it was, the way it's shot, where, you know, obviously you're following this season,
yes,
which is why it's called The Last Dance, but there is a they're kind of picking all of the things that you kind of fade from your memory. Like, I remember them going back and forth about the front office, but I totally didn't recognize that it was as deep as it was. Yeah. Like, I wasn't as into sports in the way that I am now, right? Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying?
And it wasn't as much access as now. I mean, it wasn't like now. It wasn't the same.
Yeah, exactly. There was no insiders and all of that sort of shit. You know, you got your information from the paper or Sports Illustrated articles, some sort of sports mag. Yeah. So it was really, really dope to see that. I thought it was really incredible that they talk about Scottie Pippen as well.
Yeah.
And they talk about his contract, which was a big bone of contention during that period.
He was the 122nd highest paid player in the league on a team that had won, at that point, 5 championships. He was basically the second best player in the league and was getting paid 122nd much money.
Yeah. So one of the things that people harp on was that he had a bad deal. And in hindsight, with no context, it appears to be a bad deal.
Especially look at it in today's world.
Until you add context and nuance and understand why he did what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Scottie had a very large family. They were from the middle of nowhere in Arkansas.
Hamburg, Arkansas.
I mean, the middle of fucking nowhere.
3,500 people in the town.
Them accents were molasses. Like, I had to wipe residue from the syrup off my goddamn teeth.
Them niggas was country.
Yeah. And so, when you couple that, you couple growing up with probably dealing with food scarcity, dealing with just uncertainty about financial security.
Remember, his father was paralyzed because his father.
I was getting ready to say. Then you couple that with two paraplegic people that need care.
Yeah.
So to tell someone in 1991 that they were going to get guaranteed $18 million over the next 7 years. And now the NBA that we have in our minds today, right, is not the NBA of 1998. And the NBA of 1991 is not even remotely close to the NBA of 1998. What the Bulls did really transformed. So in that time between Scottie signing that deal and this issue is the Bulls run off three in a row. Mm-hmm. The Rockets then come and do two in a row. Mike comes back. They win two more. Mm-hmm. And in between that, there's also the Dream Team.
Yep.
Right? Like there's a – so the game has become international now. So there are all sorts of money sort of opens up and things of that nature. So, yes, should Jerry Reinsdorf had come in to renegotiate in good faith with Scottie because he was undervalued in that deal? Yes, that would have been a nice thing to do, except the last time I checked, you know, billionaires don't become billionaires because they give away money.
Yeah.
Okay. They just have, and this isn't about the money, because whatever that money he would have given to Scottie would be, you know, ultimately sort of inconsequential.
Yeah.
They are very old school in that I'm getting the better of this deal, and you just have to deal with it
until the deal is over.
Until the deal is over. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. So Scottie's agent didn't, you know, send him down the river or fuck him over. Again, he was paid $2.7 a year in 1991. Okay. $2.7 a year in 1991 ain't no hoe, my nigga.
That's a good money, yeah.
Like what are we talking about? The nicest car was going to be what, an $85,000 Porsche?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what are we talking about? You can get a big-ass house for what, $300,000, $400,000?
Yeah, $500,000 is getting you something crazy.
So all money is relative. And again, he wasn't valued, and so I understand that. Like, they were getting more for their, you know, more for what they were paying. But again, that's what you do when you take that risk. And Scottie, what he did was very honorable. It was what a dutiful son does.
Yeah.
It is what a dutiful brother does. It is what you do when you grow up in a family that is tight-knit and close, and they are not going to let each other struggle.
Yeah.
And he understands that there were sacrifices done to make sure that he was okay.
Yeah.
And he was willing to repay that. And, you know, he had a blessed career, man. He had a hell of a fucking run.
And he making the money back up at the end when he went to play in Portland. And
he was getting like $19 million a year. He was stealing money.
He was in Houston. He
played for Houston for a year.
Houston for a year, then in Portland. But I thought, you know, his brother Billy Pippen was on there.
He got them good false teeth too.
Good false teeth, cheese in them. it was interesting to see Mike be. This is gonna sound weird, but to see Mike be human, like when they showed his mom, who looks amazing,
amazing.
Like you can say, his mom's gotta be
78.
Yeah, exactly.
She's 78.
I'd be sniffing 80. And I loved how her mother called her husband Mr. Jordan.
Yes.
She never called him James.
I love that. She was like, don't get it twisted.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that immediately. She was like, Mr. Jordan said. I was like, exactly. Ain't no Michael. Ain't no whatever his name is.
His father's name was James. And the only person who called him James is me. So I'm not going to put it out there for you to call him James.
Because y'all white people ain't not to refer to my husband and say, what James said. That's not going to happen.
to be clear, that was all that was about.
Yeah. Yeah. His name is Mr. Jordan.
One of you little hipster motherfuckers with a man bun say James, or he's going to go down in that house.
Right. It's a fucking problem. This and interview James is over.
What you
saying?
Yeah.
This interview is over.
You better put a handle on that name.
Exactly. But it was interesting to see Mike the Human and talk about, you know, his time in North Carolina and talk about his rivalry with his brother.
Wait, I have a question though.
Yeah.
Why are Mike's eyes so red? I don't know.
I think Mike, I'm talking shit, but I believe Mike now is probably drinks a lot.
Okay.
Not like alcohol. Yeah. Like he's falling down.
Yeah.
You know? But he's sipping.
I know a couple people that, you know, like, interacted with him on a regular basis.
Okay.
He's a fucking vampire. Mike will legitimately sleep like 3 hours.
And be going.
That's why it would be nothing for him to go to Atlantic City and gamble all night and then come give the Knicks 55 on the next day. Yeah. The one thing people that really they'll probably get into this at some point down the line of the interview, but people that really have been in and around the league, they talk about, yo, Mike is built different than anybody. Because you weren't gonna outplay him and outparty him or outhang. Like, he was doing all that shit. He was doing all that shit and would get up. And you're gonna get these buckets.
Yeah.
It was nothing to him. He was built very differently. And I think over the course of time, I think that Mike's also about 55 now?
56, yeah. I think. 56 to
55. 56?
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely drinking the best of the best. He definitely drinking that Louis.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like it's nothing.
I think he had a little glass of Louis when he was doing an interview on the little table there.
Not Mike. It was absolutely brown liquor. It had him a little taste.
You know what I'm saying?
Get right.
None of interviews is long. You need a little something to...
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You could tell they were very long because the sun goes down.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can see it basically turns to night.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed this. Again, it was only the first two parts. And there's 8 more to go, so we'll kind of keep covering it. But I just really enjoy seeing Mike be human and just, like you said, remembering things. It's like, oh shit, I forgot about the Scott, how deep that Scottie Pippen thing was, and you know, it was really, really good, really well done. I'm looking forward to Sunday. So let's end with the big boom, which was last night's battle, but it started on Saturday between Babyface and Teddy Riley. There's so much to say. I don't even know kind of even damn near where to begin with this shit. So Timberland and, you know, we know Timberland and Swizz Beatz have a series now. They've named Versus, where they pit two producers against each other to play their best records. Teddy and Babyface, obviously two iconic producers, writers, musicians. Too many hits to even name, honestly. And Saturday night was everybody was geared up to go. There was watch parties. I was on a Zoom with a bunch of Atlanta niggas. And you know, of course, they talking mad shit because they all like, they call him Kenny. Kenny gonna kill this nigga. I'm like, well, kill is strong. You know, we'll see what happens. But you know, let's act like Teddy ain't got no records. Let's not do that.
A lot of people were also like, Teddy gonna kill Face. I mean, the reality is, going in, and I think, Jeff, you'll agree with this, going in, it really was all going to depend on how they played their song.
Absolutely.
Because we said this last week, I think. Kenny has 26 number ones, right? This nigga got Grammys, Oscars, done whole soundtracks out the fucking wazoo.
Yeah.
But Teddy has two songs called Teddy's Jam for a reason.
Yeah, Teddy created a genre.
Yeah, and Teddy
literally created a genre.
So he can't go as deep as Face, and I would also argue that Teddy's songs aren't as varied as Face's. There's only a couple of them that kind of move out of the Teddy pocket, but these battles, if it's really up to the people, it's really just, it's almost like you got to stack it like a spades hand. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you got to have your trumps and the other shit.
Yeah. So Saturday, by the way, it says the meeting's going to end in 10 minutes. Cause I guess I don't have an upgrade on my side. So we're going to get through this. So Saturday was unmitigated disaster. Technically, Teddy couldn't get shit right and face is sitting
there. But it was
there,
the funniest thing I ever seen in my whole life.
Oh, Black Twitter. Oh, you cannot give Black Twitter that much ammunition.
Nothing.
The Black Twitter shit was better than the battle in and of itself on Saturday. The Black Twitter shit, it went to Sunday.
It went till yesterday when it was worth it. Because yesterday before it started, Spice and Atheon got on pretending to be fucking Babyface.
Yeah.
And actually ended up acting out exactly what last night ended up being.
What ended up happening. Yeah.
But on Sunday, I was literally, like, last night, Sunday night, I was literally like, I can't laugh anymore. Like, I need, like, my throat hurt. You know what I mean? My chest hurt. It was just so
Niggas, there's some genius comedy writers out there who don't even realize that they're comedy writers. So, again, Saturday was a disaster. They had 500,000 people on their Saturday, 400,000 people on their Saturday watching the shit not work. Everybody mad. So they decided to do it again last night. And again, a bunch of technical difficulties.
Which I was surprised Babyface agreed to.
I was too, actually. I thought Face was going to just be like, I'm out. But, forgot to mention, Teddy had a full, a band on Saturday.
And
also have it go through his website, which was some janky shit.
Which was also the problem, right? So I think I mentioned that. I wonder if I can upgrade this. So I think I mentioned that a few weeks ago, Teddy did a stream on his site that he keeps throwing people to, and he had a whole band and back Blackstreet and all that stuff. No social distancing. So we log on the other night. This nigga is styled, groomed, 50,000 people, multiple cameras, because he was trying to shoot for his site at the same time as doing the feed.
Yes.
But all that tech and everything for his site ended up fucking up the audio for speed, but also IG isn't made for,
not built for this.
Any kind of extra rigs, plugins, not like all that dual stuff. It's not like the compression isn't built for all that audio. And it just that's what.
So you're getting all these echoes, and you just it's a fucking mess. So anyway, like I said, so they did it again last night. There was some technical issues. But I will say, once they got rolling for about 35 minutes or so, it was a real battle. Like, for 35 minutes, 40 minutes, before technical issues kicked in again, they was throwing some haymakers at each other. It was like,
And Face came to what I really appreciate, that he wasn't all the way in the energy of it, but Face came to play.
Yeah, Face had edits.
Face had battle edits that were cut into the meat. Like, he would go verse, chorus, fucking bridge.
Yep.
Now, like, he was hitting all the important parts. He came with edits. He had stories. He had shade. It was like, what? Like, Face was ready.
Yeah, Face was ready. And then Teddy's first cover of this was cool, but then Teddy caught a groove, and it was like, wait a minute, oh shit! Like, then I thought it was over when Face jumped on with the acoustic guitar. Which Teddy was pissed off at, because they told Teddy he could have no instrument.
Because he needed to chill.
Exactly.
And he
sung "When Will I See You Again" live. At first, I thought it was the record.
A lot of people did.
I was like, oh, wait a minute, this nigga's singing it. God damn, I didn't realize this nigga was singing it. Which was incredible. And I was like, ooh, that might have been a death blow.
Well, no,
Teddy came right back with "Before I Let Go." It was like, oh, shit, hold on now. We're really doing this thing here.
But after that, he left the room.
Yeah, and Teddy left the room because it was about to run out.
But I also found it surprising that Teddy pulled out three Blackstreet features, like not even Blackstreet songs. He pulled out three Blackstreet features, which I thought was
cheap. Yeah, he did the remix. He did the remix for Janet Jackson.
Get the Lonely remix.
He did the
Foxy Brown. And The City Is Mine with Jay.
Jay-Z, exactly.
All three of those to me are cheap. And every time Face was like, but did you produce that?
You wrote that? You wrote that? Oh, by the way, sidebar. Face is the shadiest nigga I ever.
Ever. The most ever. Elegantly shady.
I don't know what y'all was expecting from a 60-year-old nigga from the Midwest. Have you ever met a 60-year-old nigga from the Midwest? They all the same.
All Face needed to do is have one of them little Cartier glasses that Leonard Floyd Mayweather's guy wear.
Yo, I will say I also thought, and I might be going out on a limb here. I thought SWV was cheating a little bit because I just felt
that's
like
that's Pharrell's beat.
And like that's such a heavily influenced sample, right? Like it's not like a chopped up sample. You're like, oh shit, that's what that is. It's Michael Jackson, my nigga.
Yeah.
I think Teddy could have done better. Like, I thought he would save human. I thought he was going to pull Human Nature out, but I thought he would, I mean, the Human Nature remix, but I thought he'd save it till later. But, like, when he played Heavy D's Is It Good to You instead of his Is It Good to You with Tammy Lucas's vocals, I was surprised. Yeah. And I was surprised.
And I wish he would have played We Got Our Own Thing by
Heavy. That's what I said. I'm surprised he didn't pull out We Got Our Own Thing because he was clearly saving Rum Shaker and Remember the Time for Last. Like, I think you only needed either Jam or Keep It in the Closet. You didn't need both.
Yeah, right. And because Jam, the thing about Jam is, because the thing about Jam is, Jam, the vocals start really late. Like, it's a lot, right. It's a really long intro. So it's like, you know, it doesn't lend itself well for this type of battle because it takes so long for the song to kick in.
Right.
The battle for me ended when that nigga said, I'm going to play my brothers. So yeah. Teddy was like, oh, you know, I did my brothers. And this nigga literally played his brother's record.
Yeah. Right.
Like, nigga.
Like, literally his brother.
Nigga, that's like, better than them, nigga.
Yeah.
Like, it ain't your brother, like, L.A. is your brother. These are your actual brothers.
Yeah.
Like the nigga played like his brother's brother. Like,
them yeah.
Like,
Anna,
for Anna real.
And it was a smash, you know? Yeah.
A huge fucking record.
Yeah.
I do have to say, I'm so happy that Face play Karen White, because I feel like Karen
played
some goddamn joints.
He played two. He played The Way You Love Me and obviously Superwoman. He played two of them.
Karen has some joints.
Yeah.
I'm
so
happy about that. But we didn't get to. I don't think we got to a Pebbles joint.
No, he didn't play Breathe Again. He didn't play.
Yeah, he didn't get into the Tony joint.
He didn't play.
He ain't played Roses of Red by the Mac Band, nigga. I'm waiting for that.
But he did play Down My Heart. He did play Down My Heart.
Yeah, but somebody mentioned, like, Teddy played Down My Heart and Changed the World as his whole music. And, like, Changed the World. Somebody was like, Changed the World won record of the year. That's his fucking whole music. Like, let me play this throwaway shit.
While we wait for Teddy to log back in.
I mean, face the shit goes, yeah.
This thing about the cutoff, I was trying to upgrade, but it's not letting me upgrade.
I wish I could have an upgrade. You know what? I'll start the next. Well, I mean, we don't need another 40 minutes, but we're going to have to go one more round.
Yeah, So just like Teddy and them, we're going to stop this here. And we're going to come right back.
Y'all go to Jeff's Live. Go to Jeff's Live. Jeff in the number sign.
Exactly. And we're going to come right back.
Sean freezing. Sean like, all right.
And we're going to come right back.
All right.
All right, cool. Yeah.
I'm gone.
All right, cool. All right, cool. So, yeah, so, like we were saying, there was some records that both of them didn't play. Face didn't play a lot more records. They only played one record off the Way to Excel soundtrack. So he didn't play Knock on Cry. He didn't play Sitting in My Room. He didn't play Let It Flow.
They didn't even really get into the 90s good, to be honest, because my guess is that his last two that he was holding, he was definitely holding Be Your Baby Tonight, so he was probably holding Breathe Again too for his last two, because we didn't get Face's last two songs, and he never did I'm Your Baby Tonight. I gotta imagine that.
Yeah, he was gonna play that. You got Miss Whitney. He definitely won't play that.
Yeah.
You said his
and don't be cool. It was either where do we get? Did we have?
He didn't play Don't Be Cruel, did he?
He didn't do Don't Be Cruel. He didn't do Breathe Again, and he didn't do I'm Your Baby Tonight.
Yeah.
So he had several in the chamber. That was my thing. Like, there's a lot of ways could have gone. Like, multiple, several, plenty. I mean, the thing, I do want to point out, like, two things. The first thing is, Faison and Teddy, you know, we joke a lot about old niggas. I mean, the reality is Teddy just turned 50, and I mean, he's not that much older, or he might be 51. He's not that much older than all of us collectively in here, but you can just tell he's disconnected from this shit, right?
Yes, like, yes, yes.
Because Face, I expect Face at 60, whatever. Like, Face isn't exactly up on IG. And Teddy wasn't really either that often. Like, he posts up, but Face
kept working his shit properly,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, you know, even Teddy was like, I'm a meme? What do you call it? Yeah. I don't know if y'all were there in the beginning, but when Teddy was trying to tell Face how to pin the fucking versus message at the bottom of the screen, which they never figured out. It was the most hilarious shit. He was like, okay, so you need to pin this at the bottom of the screen. Start with the number sign. He ain't say hashtag. Start with the number sign.
Versus. Mash the button. You got to mash the button.
And then Face was like, okay, but what do I do? And then he was like, the at sign and Timbo. How Timbo is spelled? Like, it was the funniest.
Timbo.
Timba with an A. Okay. Teddy running out the room every other minute. I need my charger.
Teddy is so busy. His spirit is so busy. That nigga could not. When Face pulled out that guitar, that nigga couldn't wait to go get that keyboard. And he was so happy. Somebody said this, like, I know I've been hard on Teddy only because, like, I have all respect for Teddy. But Teddy can't help but make everything about Teddy. And this was supposed to be about them, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, you saw in Teddy's face, like, he was like, they told me I can't play my instruments. This nigga was in his neck.
But see, here's the crazy shit. Them telling him that he could not play instruments is only because he don't know how to do one thing.
Yeah, exactly. He's just going to have a vocoder and a synthesizer.
You give him an inch, he's taking a mile. You
exactly. Say,
bring a keyboard. He got the keyboard. He got the voice box.
Yeah.
He got the fucking engineer in there.
Adjusting it.
Yeah, like, nigga.
Doing the most, literally, is Teddy Riley.
Literally. And, like, and even last night, I can tell some people really got in his ass after Saturday because for a minute, he kept saying, I'm in here by myself. I'm by myself. Meanwhile, this engineer is coming in and out.
In and out. There's a whole bunch of niggas right outside the room.
Fleet and shit. I mean, granted, a lot of the freezing, even though it was only happening on Teddy's side, some of it was about IG's bandwidth.
Yes.
But some of it, I think either niggas were calling him or texting him because he didn't have notifications off. And every time he tried to mess with something, it got worse.
Yeah.
So he kept doing something. Then the phone was dying, then the headphones were dying, and then
I would bet money that he does not have extenders in his home.
Mm.
Right.
When you have multi-level places like that, where you have like these sort of cavernous homes and they have sections that are far away, you have to have extenders for your Wi-Fi, or your signal simply just gets weaker because it's going through more, you know.
Especially like an enclosed studio room.
Yeah, down in the basement and all that,
That's what it seemed to me was happening with him. Yeah. Like, he was in places that's why I tweeted, like, will somebody just get this nigga a hard line give this nigga an Ethernet cord or something?
Word.
Like,
because
this is crazy.
But that was still what was so funny about Spice and Atheon earlier, because Spice really was like, Teddy was trying to dial up with Netscape. He had like the CD change, you know, like he was really clowning that, and that all ended up happening. But
it kind of ended up happening,
You know, Teddy let himself get caught up for a minute because once Face was gone, I don't even think Teddy was really trying to get Face back.
Teddy was giving a show.
He wanted Teddy show for a minute, but he was like, yeah, like, I done gave y'all all the memes, y'all done had the jokes. Now, you know, let's make some t-shirts. Let's make some money. But then he caught himself. Yeah. He was like, but then let's take that money and give to the COVID.
Give it to people with the COVID. Yeah.
But this nigga talking about social distancing while Breon is on his shoulder. Like, right, Breon was literally looking at the screen over his shoulder, and Teddy's like,
I ain't see a glove or a mask nowhere.
Nowhere. I done lost some family members. Whatever, nigga, Teddy. We ain't see you on the internet without 80 million people. Yeah, he posted and talking about I'm quarantined by myself. Nick, shut the fuck up. No, you're not.
So for those 35 minutes or so that they rocked out, who did y'all have winning?
I want to say it was Face. Once okay. Phase showed up,
it was a wrap. Yeah, it was definitely Face to me. I didn't like a couple of those records that Teddy played. I just, not, again, this is no disrespect to Teddy, and it's not like Teddy doesn't have records. I just felt like those were not great records for him to pull out.
And they don't count. I don't count those.
Yeah, and I didn't think those were fair. I didn't think those were fair shots. You know what I'm saying?
I felt like he made two mistakes. It was kind of neck and neck and body blow for body blow. When he played the Jay-Z record, I think there was a mistake.
Jay-Z's Mom was a horrible choice.
Because it wasn't a smash. It wasn't
a great record. It wasn't a great record.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not a dance record. It's nothing you associate with.
Yeah. And then he played that deep song, and it was like, this is, niggas, people don't even know this record. Nobody really know it. And meanwhile,
I liked Deep, and I knew that record, but that was, again, it wasn't this, and it wasn't a smash record.
Yeah.
Like, going
against Can We Talk or like sort of Karen White or something. It's like, dude, that ain't that level. And he had those. He had Joy still in the bag. He had other records that he didn't play.
Joy, definitely he missed the boat on that.
He didn't play, what's it called, either?
He didn't play
Goodbye Love. He didn't play, what's it called, either? The joint with Dr. Dre.
No Diggity.
Yeah, he didn't play No Diggity. Like, nigga, I mean, maybe he's holding those again, but like, it's like, dude, like, he's hitting you with haymakers. Don't go give me no
like,
album cuts.
Like, No Diggity instead of City Is Mine. At least that's actually a Blackstreet song. And at least Teddy's actually, like...
And it was a hit.
But he's
Teddy's on it.
Like, he had a song first. You know
exactly. Exactly. So, he made some mistakes. I don't know what's next for Versus. Tim and Swiss got on, and they were trying to pump up possibly doing Dr. Dre versus Puff. But they were also talking about
doing it. But Dre doesn't really want to do it.
Dre doesn't really want to do it. And they're also trying to talk about, should we do it as a pay-per-view, which is going to kill everything. Because we enjoy this, and it's a fun Saturday night, especially now, you know, with everybody having to stay in. It's a great piece of entertainment. But, like, niggas ain't anteing up for this now. Let's not be ridiculous.
But white people will.
Yeah. I'm not paying for this. Dre and Puffy is a terrible... First of all, I just would never do that. I just don't think that that's
going to make it a celebration instead of a battle.
I wouldn't pit those two against each other. I don't think that's a good matchup. I definitely think Puffy is worthy of it, and obviously Dre is. But you know, I don't know that that's a great matchup. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested. I'll take a look. You know, I'll probably. Won't really be involved with like the more younger shit, but like again, if y'all can figure out how to get Jimmy and Terry on,
I've heard from a reliable source
that Jimmy gonna get down.
No interest, and that after he saw Saturday, he really had no interest.
He ain't fucking with it.
He was like, damn. Nah, also, apparently, even though I'm guessing it would be Jimmy and Terry against Face, Jimmy. And Terry apparently have beef not with Face but with LA, which I can believe.
Oh.
So for a multitude of reasons, they ain't with it. Yeah. Also, Jermaine Dupri, I don't know if it's a
I thought you mean Jermaine and Puff at one point.
That's a more appropriate.
Jermaine is doing his own thing with
I saw that with Dallas Clawson,
I wrote that song, which I don't think is a battle. I think it's more of just like a series, like let me remind you of my shit. But people are giving them a lot of shit. Like, why would you not do it under verses?
Exactly. Why would you just not keep this going? So, I don't know. I don't know that who's left. I mean, I don't know this for sure, but Pharrell doesn't feel to be too interested.
I mean, but who can go against Pharrell? Yeah. Like, Pharrell, it would have to be Pharrell battling himself, like early Pharrell, late Pharrell, Neptune.
Yeah, because it's such a wide range of music that he does.
But also, like, I would like to see, like, maybe a Brian Michael Cox and a Rodney Jerkins. I would like to see some of the Hitmen. I would want to see the Hitmen battle each other, actually. Like a Stevie versus Chucky, a D-Dot versus...
Like Nasheem or something.
Yeah, I would like to see the Hitmen battle each other. But, like, they're still maybe not the big super producers. I mean, they are not, like, the big super visible producers. Like, we ain't got a Rockwilder in here yet. We ain't got Trackmasters in here yet.
I think the Alchemist, I think we're supposed to be Alchemist
and Havoc. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm tuning in for
some hip-hop shit.
Give them some grimy, crate-digging shit. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, you know, after that, I'm sure Tim and Swizz are speaking about this literally right now, trying to figure out where to go next with it and what to do with it next. But, you know, kudos to them for even for getting it this far and getting this off and really stopping stopping people and having people lock into this thing now for the past, what, 3 or 4 Saturdays have been all really big numbered battles.
The rhythm and growing. I just got one rant. So we already talked about this with Teddy last week, but Roland fucking Martin decided to get his ass on the internet and do a 10-minute video about how this needs to be on a Black-owned platform. Listen, LLC people, I get it. Black-owned is always ideal. However, part of the reason this shit took off and this shit works is because Instagram is a platform that everybody's already on. Mm-hmm. There's ease of user experience. And part of the reason you want to go into the live is to see who else is in the live.
Exactly.
Because everybody else is on this fucking platform, right?
The comments and all that.
Mm-hmm. So when you say something like, we could have 500,000 users on your own platform. No, you couldn't, because there's a conversion rate. Yep. There's user adaptation. And also, how fucking easy do y'all think it is to create a test, and launch a platform that can support a dual live stream and hundreds of thousands of users logging onto the site? Like, this shit crashed Instagram. Instagram exactly. Is a 10-year-old platform with thousands of employees and dev people and engineers and all of that shit.
And a parent company called Facebook.
Yep. Right. That this is a company that is already used to handling 3 million people a day, every day, and it crashed their shit.
Roland, want you and your cousin out to the garage.
That nigga irks me, man. Like, that nigga irks me like no other. And mostly because...
the mentality.
But mostly because, first of all, this wasn't for you. Okay?
Exactly.
And second of all, it's that sort of mentality as to why you guys are always struggling. Okay, because nothing you do is organic, and nothing you do comes with a certain spirit and a certain element to
it. So he's jumping on late and just trying to figure out a way to cash out.
Trying to jump on late and trying to cash out, nigga. Like, none of this was about this. Did you listen to anything Swizz said before? And furthermore, my nigga, like, how about you just get on your own fucking get a network gig or figure out your own shit.
Also, since you got everybody.
I'm a chill, man, because that nigga there, man.
The irony is, you're putting the whole message on Twitter. Like, I retweeted, like, nigga, why you ain't post this on the BET app? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Or RolandMartin.com.
Yeah.
And this is no slight to the fact that are there black owned platforms? Sure, they're black owned platforms. Okay. Again, like everyone said, do they have the infrastructure to support this level of traffic? They do not, because you know why? Because most businesses, they grow, okay? Yeah, exactly. They don't go from fucking, you know, 25,000 users to 3 million people trying to log in. That's just
at one time.
Stupid.
At
it's
one
just
time.
Dumb. It's dumb. It's ass backwards. And honestly, man, somebody sent me that, you know, and I'm just kind of like, yo, man, like, You don't really get any of this.
No,
I get the vibe that Roland probably I wouldn't be surprised if we find out later on Roland cousin or something got a little app he coming up with.
Roland just thinks he's empowering black people, but here's the problem, right? There are business ideas and then there are creative ideas, right? So if you are creating a business or a product or even like a certain kind of tech, if you are creating a product, then yes, you need to maybe be driven by cost benefit analysis and what there's room for in the marketplace. When you are doing something that is creative, however, the energy has to leave. And that's what Teddy missed. The reason that Teddy is famous is because New Jack Swing created energy. It created a culture and an atmosphere, and that caught on. Like, it pushed it forward. So if you are going into something like, I'm going to create something hot, and you're automatically thinking about the money, your shit is going to fall.
The bread.
We can always tell. We can smell it.
A mile away.
And I mean, on a smaller scale, I had people do that with me in Music Sermon. Like, you need to put this behind a paywall. You shouldn't be putting all street shit on Twitter. And I was like, if I put it anywhere else, the engagement doesn't happen. And
it's over. Yeah, it's going to be six people looking at it. Yeah,
and the engagement is why Music Sermon works, because people can respond and talk about it in real time as I'm doing them. Mm-hmm. I was like, it doesn't happen on any other platform. But you know what? Music Sermon netted me a whole bunch of other opportunities. Versus exactly. As these artists, these people, these producers are playing shit. They produce 10, 20, 30, in the case of Face and Teddy, 30 fucking years ago.
Exactly.
Things about the skyrocket. My nigga, yep. People I even thought about you are all of a sudden they're back on their radar. Like and there's room for Swiss and Tim to do something with this when we come
out. They'll figure it out. I'm sure they're having discussions every day. People are calling them about it.
And listen, we're talking as three people who earn a living from this world. We're not anti. Don't make any money. No one's saying that. And Teddy should absolutely cash in on, you know, the things that he has deposited into the culture as mm-hmm. well as anybody else. But understanding the reason that people like the other guy don't get this is because they don't create anything.
Exactly.
They are not creative people. And one of the things you do as a business person is you respect that space, and your job is to allow creativity to occur,
right?
And figure out how you can work around that creativity, not manage it, work around the creativity to provide those income streams and figure those things out. That's the people who work behind the scenes that's my point.
Step on the art, and that's where
you gotta work around it,
right? That's what Teddy lost sight of on Saturday. Teddy was so concerned, and even at his live shows, Teddy is so concerned with the bells and whistles, he forgets about the art, the heart of the art.
Just play the jams, bro.
This was like, the hits are already made. So y'all as producers do not need to be showing up with all kinds of extra instrumentation, with background dancers, with motherfucking green screens. Well, we are here. We are here
for the music.
You as producers, which means we want to hear the song the way you fucking produce them.
Exactly.
Push the button. Exactly. God damn it. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. Do like Face. Do a battle edit. Push the button. Tell a story. Keep it moving.
And keep it going. Exactly. So we're going to wrap it up on that. Everybody, as we always say, everybody stay safe out there. Stay in. Don't follow these governors to the death march.
Don't believe the hype.
Don't believe the hype. Stay in. Stay safe. And we will see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.